welcome to the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets World Series Preview Show. This is Vinny with my co-host, Mike. Mike, I hope you noticed I emphasized that World Series Preview Show because I was trying to convince myself that this is actually a thing. Can you believe we're here, Mike? World Series Preview Show.
Say the last time we're Mets fans, you got to believe. A lot of firsts tonight. This is our first World Series preview show. Hopefully not our last. On Blue and Orange Station Talking Mets Baseball. It's our first podcast with Mets' National League champions, and I guarantee you that won't be a last.
You got that right. Yeah, you really in the mode here. But I can't blame you. I mean, the events of, you know, we could extend this and say the events of the past month. But especially if we want to just focus on the events of the past week, the way that the Mets played in the NLCS against the Cubs, it's pretty hard not to be as optimistic as you are. I don't think any of us, we had our great panel in our preview show last week, and when we talked about the series, we were all pretty optimistic. We all picked the Mets to win, but none of us were really thinking that they would play as well as they did. It's not just that they swept, Mike. It was that it was never in doubt. They did not trail in any games. They played extremely well in all phases of the game. They looked like a steamroller, Mike. And I think that's the thing that has everyone as optimistic as you are, that this is not just, you know, a team that is here now, but that you really see that we might have something here sustainable, even long-term, not to drink too much Kool-Aid. But that's the feeling that you get when you see the kind of performance that we just had, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, it's the formula that we were hoping we could leverage in the postseason when we talked about, you know, any time we talked about this team. I mean, if you can go back to when we didn't know exactly what this team was going to be before April, you know, in spring training, the thought was always, that the way this team was going to have to win was with dominant starting pitching, but that we had the chance to have that type of dominant starting pitching, and, you know, what would we do from there? And this series, I mean, we had the one game where we really hit there when we put our foot on their throat in game four. But this was another example of we just kept going out game and getting the type of starting pitching where as soon as we got any type of a lead, that's it. It was all, you know, it was over. And there were very few moments in this series where the Cubs were even really challenged, you know, really put any kind of scare in. And I want to cite one before it all gets forgotten because we were both there Sunday night. As far as I remember, I mean, it was really only, to me, the most scary moment of the entire series was when Nice had to come in and pitch to Rizzo, and he struck him out. And I do want to point that out because, you know, Nice has hardly been needed. That's the only batter, if I remember correctly, that's the only batter he faced in this particular series. And it's just nice, you know, I mean, we know how long he's been with the franchise. He's certainly getting plenty of camera time because he makes sure he gets it in the post-game celebrations. But I thought that was a great moment for him. And that, I mean, to show you, I mean, in four games, that was about the only time I had any stress level.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think that was the moment where you thought, and I can't recall which game in Chicago. It may have been game four. I apologize. It's a bit of a blur when the Cubs had a little bit of a rally going. It was game four. And there was that line drive to David Wright.
That was another scary moment.
That was one of the only ones. But again, you and I talked about this off air, and I know it sounds nuts, especially since we're supposed to be doing some analysis here. But that was one of those moments where I then kind of chalked it up to the Mets have, quote unquote, it this year. And I know that's not – sabermetrics does not calculate it. There's no formula. Bill James can't devise a way to calculate it. But there's that undefinable it that most teams in all sports, but especially baseball, have when they go on these, you know, magical runs to championships, that things fall their way, and be it the line drive goes right to right, or I think even more indicative, Mike, is in game three when the Mets were struggling to get in a run. They were leaving guys at third with less than two outs, and they took the lead on a dropped third strike to Michael Conforto on a wild pitch that allowed them to take the lead 3-2 in game three, was another one of those moments where it just makes you feel like, you know, that momentum or any of that stuff that most people who really do hardcore analysis of sports laugh off. But it was one of those things we started to say, you know, there's something to that. It, you know, it's quote unquote their year. And I know, I don't know how you feel about that, Mike. I know you've seen it over all your years of watching sports, especially this team. So it's hard to deny that it exists. But, you know, instances like that make you think that it's not only does it exist and it's real, but it's happening right now, 2015, with the Mets.
Well, I think when you get in short series, I mean, you know, the phrase you're hearing a lot now from the Saber community is regression to the mean, right, as far as breaks,
right,
evening out. And I always go, well, I agree with that, by the way. And I always go, you know, that's not really that sophisticated, because I remember being a small child and, like, you know, just having my mother say to me, or my father saying to me, oh, things will even out. I mean, so, and I think the beauty of baseball, that whole 162-game season thing, is that in general, you know, you don't win pennants through luck. Because I agree with the philosophy of, you know, over that season, you know, somebody hit 40 home runs. It wasn't because, you know, 40 times the ball just happened to bounce over the wall, you know, on the right side of the wall. Things have, you know, and if a guy hits 350, there's line drives at people and there's loops to drop in, and it all, you know, it all tends to come together. But now when you get into short series, and we see it every playoffs, every World Series, there's not as much time for a regression to the mean. There's not enough time for it. And being lucky can really be as important as being good. And so far, I mean, we've had one game turn on a crazy play where nobody was covering third base and Daniel Murphy just, you know, trotted over to third base. And now we've had another game where, you know, we scored the go-ahead run, as you just pointed out, on a ball that goes past, you know, the catcher on an actual strikeout. The one thing about that one, though, is it was lucky and it wasn't lucky, because I don't know how many balls that guy thought he was going to bounce that catcher was going to break the block.
Hey, that's a great point. The catcher had stopped a couple, I believe even the batter before Conforto. And if my memory is playing tricks on me, I apologize. But I remember in the moment thinking, man, I can't believe that ball didn't get past. So you have a good point. But still, regardless, even though I did think it at the moment, and you just brought it up, it doesn't happen. I mean, they're, you know, Mickey Owen is, you know, in history in the World Series because of a drop third strike. Everybody, that's the only reason anybody knows the name, is because it happened. And that's a testament to how rarely it happens, and it happened. So anyway, look, we're spending a lot of time on this stuff. We do have some other things to talk about. We're going to have, I guess, we're going to try to stick with what works and have our panel, but it's a bit of an abbreviated panel. We do have Ed Marcus joining us tonight from Mets Police. He'll be joining us in just a minute or so. We're going to talk about, get his thoughts on the series. We'll talk about, obviously, really the main focus will be looking ahead to the World Series, getting his thoughts. And, of course, I know you know how it works on this show. We're going to be putting him on the hot seat and asking him for his prediction at the end. But let's get started. Here we are with our special guest, Ed Marcus. How are you, Ed? How are you tonight?
Hey, how's it going, Vinny and Dave? Yeah, I'm hoping my tush gets a little toasted here tonight. It is a little nippy outside. Bad visual,
well,
I know.
Well, we're going to want to talk a little bit, and you know the drill. We're going to talk a little bit about the last series. And then we're going to want to get your thoughts going forward on the World Series. And, of course, at the end of it all, we're going to put you on the hot seat for your prediction.
Definitely.
How do you want to start out, Mike?
All right. Yeah. So, first of all, thanks again for being with us. You know, we got a little bit of a last minute cancellation from Steve, so you're gonna have to handle two people's worth of opinions tonight. But we know you're up to it.
Definitely.
So, before we'll get to KC eventually, pretty soon, but just a little bit more Cubs stuff. The first thing. I don't know if this is a question or just your thoughts on what I'll call a statement, but at this point, the only way I can phrase it to you is, Daniel Murphy, what the hell?
I've been joking. I've said they better check his water because, I mean, the guy is a pure hitter. We all know that, but who would have figured that this guy would have blasted six home runs, you know, in those two series, six straight, you know, in six games, and that he's been such a run producer. I mean, and it's just amazing. He has literally helped propel this team. I know how good of a player he is, but I didn't think that he would be able to go into this sixth gear, shall we say, of playing.
Yeah, crazy stuff. And Vinny, what's your thoughts on Murphy? I think he's worth a little segment here.
Well, look, it is amazing. I mean, we've talked about Murphy for a long time. We all love him as a player, but we didn't love him as this kind of player. I don't think, I mean, Ed used the term sixth gear. I didn't even think Murphy had a fifth gear. And to see him do this, again, I don't mean to harp on this whole, you know, that it's a divine thing, and I don't want it to come off as really a kook. But it adds to the thought of it's just, you know, our year that this kind of stuff happens. And the other thing it does, and I think I touched on this a little bit when we spoke last time, which is this concept that, you know, Sandy Alderson had been talking about trying to put together what was, you know, considered a blueprint of the San Francisco Giants, which is you base it on pitching that is, you know, the backbone, the staple of the team. You keep these young pitchers. And that you kind of piece offense around it and that the offense kind of just happens, okay? And I thought of it as, you know, Sandy sitting back thinking, you know, hey, nobody's laughing at that Maverick book now because here he was, you know, something will happen. I don't know. Daniel Murphy will become Superman when it gets to the playoffs, and then it happens. And it's just amazing. It's going to be very interesting to see the World Series, how he's able to, you know, obviously to expect him to continue it is a little bit unrealistic. But you use the term, Mike, regression to the mean. You know, it's how long, you know, if we won another handful of games this year, you know, what is Murphy going to be like in the World Series? I mean, is he still going to be Daniel Murphy of the regular season even? Is he going to be Daniel Murphy of the postseason? Or is the regression to the mean, does that mean we have to face an 0-for-12 in the World Series? It's going to be interesting to watch. If I were a betting man, I would say that he stays relatively hot. Maybe not unconscious hot, but I still think he's going to be a hot player and he's going to be a big part of the offense in the World Series.
Well, I just think it's one of these weird situations where it just sort of just keeps getting crazier and crazier in the positive. In that last game, in that game four, you know, he hit the ball maybe better than ever. I mean, a couple of big hits early. Then, you know, when for some reason people like me are like waiting for his daily home run like it's a given, he hits that ball to the base of the center field wall. I mean, he crushed that ball that ended up a double. And I thought, oh, well, you know, there goes his home run. He's not going to get one tonight. No. I think I beat him too soon because he gets one more at bat, and sure enough, I mean, and as soon as he hit it, I knew, and I thought, I just can't, you know, I really can't believe what I'm watching. And we know that, you know, I mean, here, no one's ever done what he's done before, I mean, in the history of baseball, in the postseason, nobody's hit a home run in six consecutive games. You could look through regular seasons, you will find very few players who have ever hit a home run in six consecutive games. And so he's had the best streak of his career. I don't know how we could ever find a better streak in his career than this. he's had the best streak of his career at the best possible time for the Mets, and it's just a, you know, it's a great thing.
And
it's
the best possible
thing.
Time for him personally, Mike, not to get
he's a free agent at the end of the year.
Yeah, and I we said it last week. It's not the time and the place to really talk
right.
about free agency and all that stuff. But, you know, what about for him? What about for his agent to sit back and say, geez, have this kind of streak, these, you know, last nine games to be the best nine games of his career, heading to free agency with national television spotlight. You know, it's like a dream for them. It's a dream for the team, and it's a dream for Murphy personally.
No, that's true. You can't argue with that, right? It's not like he signed for the next 5 years. I mean, he couldn't have asked for a better time to do this. So, yeah, I mean, this is great for everybody, including him. I don't begrudge him anything that comes of it. That's for sure. You know, as a Mets fan. So I have a quick, before we say goodbye to our friends from the Second City, I have a quick question. I'm going to get a little snarky before we say goodbye. Now, I appreciate, you know, how classy the Cubs were, the Cubs fans were. They were very, they gave their, you know, team a big standing ovation. They showed on TV after it was over, after they lost. I've been to Chicago a few times. I know you. I think you have too, Vinny. I'm not sure about you, Ed. They kind of embrace it, the losing thing. I mean, they sell shirts in Wrigley Field about how long it's been since they've won. You know, they're outside hawking shirts about the GOAT. I'm thinking we really did the Cubs a big favor. I mean, if they win, don't they just become another team? Isn't the Red Sox now? The Red Sox, what the Red Sox were before they won. I actually think we did the Cubs a favor. The reason they're a national story when they finally a decent one is because they never won.
You know, I understand your point there, but you know, I mean, for a guy just like you guys, I have not seen our team win win a World Series in over almost 30 years, 29 years. I understand the pain. I mean, and I know you guys also, we've been through thick and thin within the last, you know, 29 years. We've seen some good teams. We've seen some pretty bad teams over here. Yeah, I mean, and I used to have a massive grudge against the Cubs in the mid-'80s, the Sutcliffe team, you know, especially 84. And I was talking to a couple Cubs fans, and I said to them, look, if you guys happen to beat the Mets, this is before the series started, I will be glad to root for you guys because it's past due. And they said, you know, reciprocated, saying, yeah, we're actually rooting for the Mets if you guys get past us. I think they hold on to that mythos, that mythology going, you know, because of the GOAT, because, you know, then this other Daniel Murphy that eliminated them out of the playoffs during the dead ball era. I mean, I think that's something, yes, that they have and they cling on to, but I don't know if they really cherish it. I think they would sell their souls in a moment to have that, you know, World Series banner, you know, raised over Wrigley. I mean, especially everything that they've gone through, you know, whether it was Bartman, whether it was being, you know, the 84 Padres game past them. I even the 69 Mets. I mean, that had to be, I think, the biggest, you know, killer of them within the last 50 years or so. I don't know what you guys think.
Well, I experience, and I'll throw it to you in a second, Vinny. I remember 69 actually fairly well, and I think that's one of the reasons I kind of like burying these Cubs, because for a team that at that time had not won in 61 years, man, and they had Leo out front, remember, you know, as their little mascot, DeRosa. That was an arrogant bunch, you know, that entire year until all of a sudden they choked like dogs. So,
Leo was also considered a traitor to New York, wasn't he?
I don't remember picking up on that. He had been out of the game long enough. I don't think it was that so much, but he sort of put him in modern terms, you know, he had a lot of Rex Ryan in him, and so he was the type of guy that you just loved to, you know, any team he was fronting, if you were playing against him, you wanted to be, you know, you wanted to beat his team. He wasn't the type. I mean, his famous expression was "nice guys finish last." So, you know, he was a guy you liked to beat. So maybe for me, the grudge is ending very late in life. But do you understand at all where I'm going, Vinny, with the whole they tend to embrace it more than you would think, the whole losing thing?
I agree. And look, even you talk about your comparison to the Red Sox is a good one, because I do think the Red Sox have lost something of their identity, frankly, by being so successful over the past decade. However, the Cubs, I do think, is different, because look, I'm not saying there are not diehard Cub fans who are tortured. I'm sure there are. But I think the Red Sox fans were more tortured, and that the Cubs almost embraced it, as you say, and I kind of accepted it. I mean, there's this, you know, perception. I don't know if it's really reality or not, perception that winning is not even that important to Cubs ownership, that, you know, look, they're selling the Wrigley Field experience. You know, this place is going to be sold out no matter what. Come here and drink, hang out, have a good time, and watch the Cubs lose. And it works. They make a lot of money doing it. The fans go. So I do think, you know, perhaps it's not as important for them to win. But that being said, look, we feel tortured because it's been 29 years. It hasn't been 100-plus years. Once the Mets win, let them win. Let them win one. I'll be fine with it. The last thing I do want to say is I didn't like the way the media almost portrayed the Mets as the bad guys squashing this dream. I didn't like that. I mean, this was we're having our magic carpet ride. We haven't won. We're not the Yankees, for goodness sake. We're not even the Cardinals. We haven't won since 86. So don't paint us as the bad guys because we're crushing the poor Cub fans' dreams. Give me a break. That was the only thing that bothered me.
Yeah. I understand that, too. Maybe that was irking me as well, and that's part of it. And the good news is they're done. They're gone. That narrative will go away with them again until next year. And we can move on to the World Series.
Quick question though, guys.
Sure.
I mean, it's a little bit off topic, but I mean, when you were watching the game and everything, the new scoreboard, doesn't that just seem like it should not be there? That it just took away from that old style park experience. It just seemed to be, you know, jammed in there, shoehorned, if you will, and it just whatever perception of the Wrigley Field outfield was just totally obliterated.
Oh, I agree with you 100%, Ed. I thought that, to me, it was an example of them not necessarily embracing their look at us, we're old, we got the oldie time field. They kind of threw that in there to try to say we wish it was a modern park rather than embracing the fact that it's a classic antique place. I didn't like it either.
Hey, it's like it would be like Fenway taking down the wall. I mean, you've got to know who you are, and so I'm with you guys. It's a move that doesn't to me fit what they're trying, you know, what they try to market, what they're about. So, but they did it. Now, as we move on, goodbye, Cubs. The Midwestern team, and we move on to Kansas City Royals, who ended up being the American League champions, and we you know, with this 4-game sweep, we finished first, and we got to watch Game 6 with a little bit of a rooting interest. My first question, and again, I'll start with you, Ed, is we ended up with the Royals. Was that your preference? Would you rather have seen Toronto, or are you just so happy to be there that you didn't really even think about that one?
Well, I was on Twitter. I was asking people what they thought. I put it out there that I was actually hoping that it would have been the Royals because, honestly, the Toronto bats scare me. I look at the Royals, and look, I'm not really well-versed in the American League. I'll be the first person to admit that. But I take a look at their three top starters, which I guess is Edinson Volquez, Johnny Cueto, and I forgot who that third best pitcher or, you know, or
Park. Ventura.
But they don't scare me. I mean, it's not like when you're looking at who we faced within the first two rounds, whether it was Greinke, whether it was Arrieta, whether it was Lester, you know, or Kershaw. Their pitching does not seem to jump out at me as being, okay, this is going to be top flight stuff. I mean, and they're hitting, they have some very good hitters on there, but as the old adage goes, you know, great pitching can always neutralize good hitting. So, I mean, my preference was definitely to see Kansas City, although reading now today that they think that a lot of scouts think that the Mets should have been facing Toronto, that Toronto would have been probably the easier of the two teams. I admit I'm a little nervous.
Okay. How about you, Vinny? Did you have a preference?
Look, I think my preference was that it was the Blue Jays. And while I understand what that is saying about the Blue Jays bats, you know, they have a much more potent lineup. I do think that they're a weaker team, especially their pitching, especially, you know, David Price really is not, at least in the postseason, one of these, or at least historically, he could always turn it on at any time. One of these, you know, you're afraid to face him in the postseason, guys. However, don't misinterpret. If it was a choice, I would pick Toronto. However, I'm still confident against Kansas City. I think that, you know, while they probably have a better team top to bottom than Toronto, I still think the Mets will beat them. And I know we're not in prediction mode yet. So, you know, while I may have had a slight preference, it's not that I was saying, oh, my God, I hope we don't face Kansas City. It wasn't that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm kind of coming out the same way. I didn't have a strong preference because I sort of couldn't believe that we had swept the Cubs. And I actually had a chance to focus on that, you know, with the Mets already having clinched. That was the first, you know, that was the first night surprise. So I only had about 24 hours to even think about it because up until then, I didn't care what happened over there. I was like just totally locked and loaded on let's beat the Cubs and get there, and then we'll worry about it. Once I focused on it, I have to admit I was kind of hoping Toronto would pull it out for a couple of reasons. One reason is I figured, you know, they had that game where, I mean, their staff got obliterated. They had to use a position player. If for Toronto to make it, it would have had to go seven. And I thought that hopefully what that was going to mean was they would have had to blow out their pitching like a lot, you know, just to get there. So I thought that would have been a positive for the Mets. And the other positive I thought was the more I looked at Toronto, with all of that, they have all that power, but like kind of a lot of boom and bust guys. The more their offense started to remind me of the Cub offense, and we had just handled that easily with our pitching, you know, our style of pitching. And I said, you know what? We can keep these guys in the ballpark just like we kept the Cub guys in the ballpark. I like that matchup. Now, all that said, the main thing was we're in, and at this stage, the way the Mets are playing, I'm not exactly terrified of anybody. And yeah, I'll make my prediction a little bit, too. But to focus, it is the Royals. It's not Toronto. So even though we're not 100% American League guys, hopefully we caught a little bit of Game 6 and have kept a little bit of an eye on the American League as we started to realize there was a chance this year the Mets will be in the World Series. And so I'll start with you, Ed, and just ask, is there anything about this Royals team, or what I would say more is, what about this Royals team worries you the most?
It's probably got to be their top half of their batting order. I mean, you have Hosmer, you have Moustakas, and you have obviously what's his name in center field? His name is escaping me at the moment. That's a formidable, top of the batting order over here. I mean, other than that, I mean, I think I'm not looking past them over here. I don't think they're as balanced, but it's definitely their hitting. I do feel that they are professional hitters. They're not boom and bust guys like you were saying, and they are pretty much, I mean, they know how to take pitches from what I have seen.
Okay. Vinny, what's got you concerned?
The only thing that has me concerned is the Kansas City bullpen. I think their bullpen is very good. You have Herrera, you know, as a setup man, he throws 100 miles an hour. You know, I'm actually not scared of what's his name, Madsen, but and looking game six, he kind of almost blew it for them. But Wade Davis is really good, and he's been very effective over the past two postseasons, and he also has the ability to go more than an inning. They've been using him a lot with a couple of, you know, to bring him in for more than a four-out save or more. So that scares me a bit, meaning that, you know, I wouldn't say it's the situation with the old Yankees that, you know, if you don't have the lead by the seventh inning that you're in trouble. I don't think it's that dire, but I do think it's the kind of thing where if it's a close game in late innings and you're thinking we are trying to hold it down with guys like Clifford and Reed and they're holding it down with guys like Herrera, you know, I think we don't match up as well. But that being said, our starting pitching advantage, I'm hoping that it doesn't come to that we're the ones with the lead in the seventh inning rather than looking to chase.
Yeah, and so my thing, I actually happen to agree with you 100%. The thing that concerns me most about them is their bullpen and their ability to shorten games. Davis worries me quite a bit. One, because of the quality of the pitcher. Second of all, the fact that just the quality of the pitcher. I think we'll just leave it at that. He's really good. And Mattson, we've seen him enough that he doesn't terrify me, but he's not terrible. It's a really good bullpen. It shortens the game, and I think it makes it important for us to try to get leads in these games. I don't think we want to get into too many battle of the bullpens. We've survived the first two series. I don't think our bullpen is terrible by any manner of means. How could we not be confident if it ever gets down to Familiar versus anybody? We can certainly hold our own if we get to that point in the game. The other guys, though, they're not awful, but they're just scary enough that you can even see in the way we've utilized the bullpen that Terry even isn't 100% confident with anybody. Clip has really struggled. It's not just the playoffs. He struggled the last 3 weeks of the season. And that's really had the fact. I think if he had continued the way he did those first two or three weeks after we got him, things would feel a little different about that bullpen, but it's not quite at that level. So I could see that being the biggest thing to fear. I think the other thing is, and I want to contrast that with the series we just saw, the Royals can really catch the ball. We're going to have to earn our hits. Kyle Schwarber, he had two home runs and was one of their best offensive players because I don't even know if he was a net positive. I mean, he misplayed so many balls that I kept seeing people comparing him to people. And I saw him compare it to Todd Hundley, Lucas Duda, Daniel Murphy. These are not good comparisons, as we know. Well, I'm going to say, no, he's a hybrid of – he had the agility of Greg Luzinski and the tracking of fly balls ability. If you remember this guy, and if you're a diehard Mets fan, you probably do, of Chris the Animal Carter. Who we got from Billy Wagner, who basically fell down every time there was a ball hit to him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Schwarber was just horrendous. Well, the Royals go the other way. They throw a lot of real defense at you all over the field. And I think that's something to watch for. You know, we're not going to get any cheap hits. We're going to have to earn our hits in this series. Soler was nothing to write home about either.
But the good news here, actually, is – if you take a look at, two of their main starting pitchers, which is, like I said, Volquez and, Cueto, the Mets if I remember right, the Mets used to knock around Volquez a lot, and same thing with Cueto. I mean, if anything, they should be pretty well-versed on their stuff. It's not like they haven't faced these guys before, and there is a familiarity there, which might play to our advantage, whereas the other way around. I don't think most of the Royal hitters have seen the likes of Harvey, DeGrom or Syndergaard.
Oh, no, in starting pitching, and I'll get your thoughts in a second too, Vinny, on that, because the starting pitching is where I think we really have the advantage here. They have good starting pitching. You don't win as many games as they did without, really good starting pitching. Ours is just superior. And we've seen some of these guys that came over from the National League. They're good. They're not great. Even when we get to game four, I don't know, Chris Young. I mean, we've got
You know, we got six guys on better than that. So what do you think about these funny pitching? I guess you like that one for us, right, Vin?
I completely agree. I mean, I think that look, I know I mentioned before about this, you know, incalculable it that we have going for us. That's not the reason that the Mets are going to win. The reason the Mets are going to win is because the starting pitching is A, superior to not just the teams they're playing, but probably, you know, the best of any team in baseball this year. And not just because of their, you know, ability, but because of where they are and how they're performing right now. And I think that the fact that, in every game, you know, be it against the best that the other team has to offer, Volquez, Cueto, the Mets have the starting pitching advantage. And you would think that over the first six innings, the Mets starting pitcher will outperform his counterpart in each and every game. I mean, I think it's pretty funny that when we talk to other Met fans, and you see it on Twitter and you see it when you just talk to people out there, you know, the concern is about, you know, the Steven Matz game. Hell, the Steven Matz game is game four. And Ed, you just said it, that game is against the likes of Chris Young. Well, who do you think is going to outperform, is Steven Matz or Chris Young? So if that's our weakest pitcher, for goodness sake. I think that's the reason why I'm confident is you say, well, none of the four matchups do we feel that we have an issue. And when you just went through successfully beating the likes of Clayton Kershaw, Zach Greinke, Jake Arrieta, and John Lester, and having no issue with those guys, you say, well, these guys aren't up to that caliber.
Yeah, and I agree. And as long as we're on the rotation now, Vinny, and I have a follow up question for you, and then I'll toss the question to Ed too. You know, we had some time. The team had time to line up the pitching any way they wanted to, and there was a lot of talk about that, about how they would line up the pitching. Are you okay with the order they came up with Harvey first, et cetera?
I actually really like it. I think it's great. I think it's, you know, the idea of Harvey first, that would be games one and five, DeGrom second, which would also line him up for six, and then Syndergaard for game three and ultimately a game seven. I think it's great. I think it probably, in retrospect, is the best lineup that they could come up with, in my opinion. I don't know if you agree, for two reasons. One is, look, I think that at this precise moment, our best pitcher has been right now Matt Harvey. I think his start in the Cubs series, he was really on his game. And I think Jacob DeGrom mm-hmm. looks a bit tired. We keep calling him a bulldog, but because in game five against the LA Dodgers and in his game three start against the Cubs, while he was good, I think in both games he gave up two runs. If my memory serves correctly, he didn't have necessarily overpowering stuff, and it was much more on guts and guile than on, you know, overpowering fastball or even great command. So I think giving him a couple days to rest, hoping to win it in five, and I know that this is really getting into arrogance territory. But you're saying, look, if you're going to use Harvey twice and you're going to use DeGrom once, and then you're going to, you know, you got Syndergaard and Matz in the other games, you're thinking, hell, we're pretty well set up to try to win it in five games. And if not, you have DeGrom and then you have Syndergaard in a game seven. That doesn't bother me. I know some people wanted DeGrom in game three in order to have him lined up for a game seven. Look, I think you go for it to try to win it before that. You don't try to say we're going to grind this out for a seven-game win. Put your best pitchers out there at the best times and try to win it as quickly as you can, Mike.
It sure worked against the Cubs, that theory. What do you think, Ed? Are you okay with the order, or have you done anything differently?
Oh, I totally agree with Vinny here. Look, I was at last Saturday's game, the first game against the Cubs, and Harvey – I was at the game where they brought it back against the Dodgers, where Harvey's first appearance of the season, in the postseason. Last Saturday, Harvey was good as I possibly almost have ever seen him. He was like that. He fed off the crowd. I think what he wants. He wants to be the guy that starts the series. He wants to be that guy on the mound, and I think he is tasting this. He is chomping at the bit, and I have no problem with that. I think having DeGrom second is a very good compliment, because you're going from pure power to a guy that, even though DeGrom can't get it up there, he's also has some very devastating off-speed pitches, which will throw them off. Having Thor, it's almost like you're going power, but there is some Let me see if I can get this out correctly. There are intangibles with each and every pitcher. It's not like you're seeing a carbon copy going up there. And when you get Thor going game three, that's going to be amazing. The only weak link in the pitching rotation is Matt, only for the fact that he's not experienced. Otherwise, I think he's going to be, in the future, he's going to be a fine pitcher. And he's going to be a good compliment. He's the type of pitcher in game four that you need to have him out there for 4 or 5 innings, and then maybe get the Colon in there to piggyback. Because you're going to have that type of, gassed, you bring Colon in, whose stuff is totally different from what you're getting. It's almost like you're getting, in these first, four games, you're going to get yourself 5 quality pitchers. It's going to be an uphill battle for the Royals, but I do not have any problems with the way that it has been constructed.
Okay. And, it's funny. Now, so here's my thoughts on the rotation order. There was obviously some time to obsess over it, because we did sweep, and for good reason. They didn't announce it right away, because probably why should they even, announce it too early? I mean, they didn't even know who they were playing at first. So I started thinking about it, and I looked at it a lot of different ways. And eventually I came to the conclusion, I don't care what they pick. All these guys are awesome. I don't care what order they pitch in. They're all going to pitch. If they have to, they're all going to pitch twice. I feel great no matter which one it is anyhow, and I didn't even care. I mean, and that's what's so wild about this rotation. I mean, even in 69, I mean, there was Steve Kuzman was pretty close to, that's sort of a Harvey DeGrom where you're almost flipping a coin. But, I mean, Steve was just so otherworldly. But still, Kuzma was great. And mm-hmm. and he had a fantastic postseason. Gentry was a really good pitcher, but he didn't give me this confidence I have with Syndergaard. It's like I can't even split up right now between these guys. They're at such a high level. So, and to wrap that sort of that point about that, we talked about worries, and this is the thing that seems to give us the least worries. If we're going to win, we're going to win because our starting pitching is going to be better than their starting pitching. That's my belief. And as we head into predictions, I have a feeling ours is going to be better, and that'll be my first prediction. And so, Ed, I'm going to start with you. As a reminder, you did pick the Mets to win the NLCS, but I don't know what's wrong with us. I mean, I'd be getting on Steve's case if he could have made it tonight as well. I don't know when we're all going to figure out that we should just be picking Daniel Murphy for the MVP. But we've so far we are combined 0-for-8 on who the MVP of the series are, because we all refuse to pick Daniel Murphy. So I'm giving you one more chance. So tell me, who's going to win, how many games, and who's going to be the World Series MVP?
Okay, I think it's going to be the Mets, but I'm going to, I said 5 last time, right? Mets in 5?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to have to say Mets in 6. I mean, because I can't get too cocky. As cocky as I am, I have to, I cannot look past Kansas City. So I'll say Kansas City takes at least 1 to 2 games over here. But even though it's going to be very close. MVP, or I want to say Murphy, but looking at this. But, I still will have to go with this time I'm going to go, honestly, it's going to be Familia. It's going to come down to those last 3 outs where we're going to be having heart attacks. It's going to be Familia.
And that's a great one, Ed, because let's face it, if Murphy wasn't performing like an alien life force, Familia would be the MVP so far. So no, that's a good pick, and right, and he just looks like he's just rolling, you know, and it's an extension of his season. So that's a great pick.
Effortless.
That's a great win for
him against Dexter Fowler. That last pitch that Fowler that didn't even look. That was like a Carlos Beltran moment. I mean, and you saw him yelling at the umpire in disbelief. I mean, it was just one of those knee buckling things. The kid, when he is on. It was just amazing to see.
Not an excellent. Vinny, prediction time.
Look, I have a feeling that it's Mets in six, but I have to go on record as saying Mets in five because I want that so desperately. I want them to win
Brave
at home. I want to be at that. I'm going to be at games 3, 4, 5. I want to be at the clincher. And if they're
hey,
up
my
three.
Ticket?
Excuse me?
Where's my ticket?
We'll have to talk offline. If they're up 3-2 and they're heading to Kansas City, I'm going to be spending that day, that Monday, scrambling to figure out how to get not only a ticket but an airfare to get to Kansas City. And I A, don't want to go through that effort, and B, neither does my credit card. So to spare that pain – I'm going to have to say Mets in five. It just makes things so much easier in my life.
And who's going to be the MVP there?
Look, I'm going in a different direction, and I know that I should just say Daniel Murphy and make it much easier. I'm going with Matt Harvey. I think he's going to pitch two gems, games 1 and 5. I think he is going to be the MVP because he's going to have 2 out of the 4 wins and with dominating performances. And I think it's going to be one of these series where, while I know it's ridiculous to say that Daniel Murphy's not going to hit a home run every day, because that's like saying the sun's not going to come up in the morning. It happens all the time. But I think it's going to be one of those things where they just win by different things every game. They win on, you know, a sacrifice fly one game, and they win on, you know, different a late hit by somebody. I think it's just going to be a different hero every game. And so that they're just going to pick an MVP of, you know, out of everybody who performed well, who performed the best, and I think Harvey's going to have 2 wins, so he'll get it.
Okay. All right, predictions are now I'm going to pick the Mets in six, and I'm with you, Vinny. I really, really would love – they haven't clinched anything so far at home. It's been very strange, and Mets fans have waited so long you know, since 1986 for a World Series champion, and it would just be wonderful if they could do it in 5 games. And I will be rooting very hard for 4 or 5 from my heart, but this is not my heart. This is my analysis side. I come out at 6. I do think this is going to be a lot of close games. We're going to sweat these games. I think both teams are kind of built for low scoring when both teams are playing well. I think pitching will be the difference, and ours is superior. Overall, full staffs. So I do think we'll win. I think we'll win in 6. And even though if I had any sense, I'd be picking Daniel Murphy to be the MVP in this series. At this stage, I'm actually afraid to pick him because I don't want our listeners, if he doesn't hit a home run in every game of this series, to say it's all my fault.
Exactly.
there's no way I'm picking Murphy. He's out. I'm going to go with Ed's pick. It's a great pick. It was a toss-up for me between Familiar and Grandison. Grandison is also playing at a very high level. And so you picked him last series. It was a good pick, Vinny, and he had a great series. And I gave him consideration. But, boy, Familiar has just been fantastic. I don't see anything to see why it's going to stop. I mean, he's just dominating. I think that with the days off again, we're going to see some twinning Familiar things that are going to really impress everybody. And I think there's going to be a lot of possibilities for World Series MVP. It's going to be one of those things that maybe won't be as clear-cut as when Murphy just won the NLCS. But when they hand that particular trophy off, I do think it will be to Familiar.
Hey, Mike, I just want to make one statement about Familiar. Well, by the way, that is a great pick, but we have, and a lot of Met fans have picked on Terry Collins over the years, particularly about his bullpen management. And I think we have to give Terry a little bit of credit here in that his use of Familia has been outstanding. I mean, he has brought him in, you know, in the eighth inning. He hasn't been afraid to get him in there. You know, he's not just playing with the old, I'm going for the closer. He's got to start an inning. He's got to pitch the ninth. You know, he really is riding him, and not to the point where it's where he seems fatigued. He's really managing it properly. He's not automatically bringing him in to start eighth innings either. He's really pushing all the right buttons when it comes to using Familia, and I, you know, I don't think any of us have, could ask for him to have managed it any better.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree that the way Familia has been used, I mean, he's certainly shown no, you know, been no worse for wear, and he's gotten every big out we've needed him to get. And I'm the type that, you know, I heard some people, not a lot of people, few people that I could see or hear, that when we hit the big lead in that last game, and it was only game four, bring Familia in, end the series. Everybody's got a week to, you know, recover from there. You don't worry about save situation or any of that nonsense right now. And Terry has. Just win the games that are winnable. And, no, it's been good. So the time, we could talk all night, but the time is moving on us. We got the predictions in from the panel. We'll see how we do this time. As long as we just keep picking the Mets, we seem to be doing good on that part. I'm not doing so great on the MVP so far. Ed. We're way too superstitious. That's why we didn't want to change panels once the roll started. We really appreciate it. We've had to use up the time three shows in a row. Thank you so much again for coming on, and really thanks for everything you've done for our podcast all season.
Look, it's an honor to be asked to be on this. This has been quite a ride, and all I know is I'm just hoping when the smoke clears, I'll be, you know, staying down Canyon Heroes outside City Hall watching the Mets getting the keys to the city and just, you know, celebrating. I mean, never in my wildest imagination. I said earlier in the season I predicted the Mets to win about 86 games and be on the fringe of the wild card. And if they got in and they went, they might have gotten, you know, into the DS, the, you know, divisional series. But never did I think that we would actually have been as good as we are now in the World Series. And not in that, but being dominating. But thank you for having me. I appreciate this.
Well, you're welcome. It's been fantastic doing these shows with you. And, Vinny, I'll throw it back to you now.
No, great. Again, I just want to reiterate what you said, Mike. Thank you so much, Ed. We really appreciate it. Great stuff. And we look forward to doing our World Champions post season recap with you when all this is said and done.
Knock wood.
Take care.
Thank you. Good night, guys.
Great spot, Mike, from Ed, and great predictions. Look, we're all kind of on board. We're all optimistic here.
It's no turning back now, Vinny.
No, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. We're not going to be joined tonight by Artie from Brooklyn. Artie has a family commitment tonight. He's not able to join us, and unfortunately, I don't think it's because he is recovering from kicking chairs or anything because of the Jets' loss to the Patriots today. I think he was okay. I think he actually got through that one okay. But in the last few minutes that we have left, Mike, I mean, there are a couple things that I did want to talk about. One being kind of, I guess you used the term Mets mania. It's been very interesting to see over this last week or two, the amount of Mets that's out there. And I use it to cover a variety of things. I'll give you a handful of examples that come to my mind. It's not just the obvious, meaning you walk around the streets and you just see more Mets stuff. I went to Modell's the day after the Mets won the NLCS, and there were at least four or five people. I didn't go in the minute the store opened. You know, I went, you know, late morning, early afternoon. There were, you know, four or five other people walking in at the same time as me with Mets gear on, going to that table to buy the National League Championship stuff. They were already sold out of things. The Mets were on Jimmy Kimmel the other night. David Wright, Matt Harvey, Jacob DeGrom, and Wilmer Flores. There were shots of – well, Matt Harvey was at the Ranger game, and he got a huge ovation. He's always at the Ranger game. Daniel Murphy, Harvey, DeGrom, and I think Kevin Plawecki were at the Islander game the other night. There was a big hand. It's just everywhere you go, Mike, it's Mets, 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 and it's just very cool.
Yeah, I mean, one of the fun things about your team just getting to a World Series, and of course it's going to be, it would be fantastic if they win the World Series, but they've only been, you know, the team's only been to a handful, let's remember that, is this part of it, where really, you know, the total focus of a nation, and especially the city that you're in, it becomes, you know, the team, and you see all this, you know, all this, everybody high-fiving you and talking about this team that we follow very, very heavily. It's become a major focus for a lot of people. And it's been a long time, because the last time we were in a World Series in 2000, it was different. It was that one weird difference. I mean, the Yankees were in, and although that was special in its own strange way, being the only Subway Series between the Mets and the Yankees, the Mets had a, you know, had a split that focus with the Yankees in their own town. Whereas now you can tell it's all Mets all the time, and it's been a long time. I mean, we've got to go way back, you know, to a World Series where the Mets were in it and the Yankees were not. So it's great
stuff. No, and you know what, Mike, and I know that this might seem a little bit weird, but I'm going to throw it out to you anyway. It's also interesting for folks like us. I mean, look, we are not your typical everyday Met fans. You know, we would be considered in the hardcore category. And I don't know about you, I'm sure it's similar. You know, a lot of people associate you when they think about you, coworkers, you know, family members, people like that. One of the first things they think about is the Mets. And so when this stuff is going on, you know, the amount of people who reach out to me, even folks who I don't talk to all the time, who send me quick emails or texts, you know, how about those Mets? It's pretty cool. It almost becomes a way that, you know, people associate you. They think of you when the team is succeeding and when they see the Mets on the news. It's kind of a cool thing. I know that this is not about me and you. It's about the team. I don't want you to misinterpret what I'm saying. But it's kind of cool that there's a little bit of a, you know, people associate this with people like us. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm going to give you a personal one on that that's about my mom, who, you know, passed a couple of years ago. And this will be the first, you know, it's the first postseason the Mets have been involved in it. She has been attending some of the games and, you know, for obvious reasons. And here she's gone now. And the amount of people that I've seen via Facebook that know me, but they're not saying it's for my benefit, because there are also people that knew my mom. I've seen people all over the country. I've probably seen 30 messages between cousins and friends of the family who are not Mets fans, by the way. They're people from all over the country that are rooting for the Mets and keep saying they're rooting for Vicky's Mets, Aunt Vicky's Mets, Vic's Mets. And I thought, imagine that. Like, everybody says it's all so silly, but, you know, she's being remembered now because of the Met, you know, because of her association as a Met fan.
That's terrific,
thing.
Mike. That really is terrific. And it just, you know, it validates, I mean, look, the amount of effort, time, energy, emotional investment, and hell, we might as well mention it, even, you know, financial investment, that we put into this fandom. In some ways, you think it's crazy. You know, people who don't like sports, they just don't get it. Well, you care, you don't get anything really out of them winning. But this is what it's all about. And to be able to enjoy this and have those kinds of personal connections that you just described, just this ride that we've had this month, it makes it all worthwhile. It really, really does. Well, we're just about out of time. We really have to thank Ed Marcus, Mets Police, for joining us. Great spot, as always. Great job. Thank you, Mike. We're going to have to keep an eye on our predictions and see how they may work out. Perhaps we'll try to do a mid-series podcast again. Everyone keep an eye on social media. If we're able to schedule something, we'll put something out on Twitter for our next show. Any final thoughts, Mike, before we go?
No, except it's getting harder and harder for us to meet up at the stadium as it gets crazier there. But we'll have to make sure we meet up at the parade.
Absolutely. We'll all be there. We'll make sure Ed said mentioned the parade. We'll be there, and we'll see if we can all get together. Maybe we'll even try to do some kind of a quick broadcast. Maybe it won't be a true podcast. Maybe we'll do something like a Periscope or something quick from the parade. But anyway, thanks, everyone, for listening. Tuesday night, it all gets started in Kansas City. I know we can't wait. I know you probably can't, too. We'll talk to you soon. And as always, let's go, Mets.